Hello, everyone, and welcome to Managed Healthcare Executives Monthly Tuning into the C-Suite podcast. In this podcast series, editors of MHE chat with healthcare professionals and executives in the C-Suite. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery and organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot. Hello, Brianna Contreras, an editor of Managed Healthcare Executive here. In this month's episode, you'll listen in on a discussion myself and managing editor Peter Werwein had in July with Mustafa Kamal, president and CEO of Prime Therapeutics, an organization in which Kamal acquired this position in July of 2023. Kamal addressed his newer role, plans for Prime, the company's more recent acquisitions and previous partnerships, and some of his thoughts on the multi-million gene therapies and price transparency from a PBM perspective.
Mustafa, can you first maybe just describe how Prime is integrating with MagellanRx? Why does the acquisition make business sense? Do you guys possibly have a plan to name a successor to you at MagellanRx? Kind of a loaded question, but if you want to go with the first half.
Yeah, you know, all great questions and aligned around the same theme of, you know, how we're bringing these two organizations together to create value for our clients and the patients that we serve. And, you know, when we first started having conversations between MagellanRx and Prime, we were excited about the potential of what the two organizations can bring when they by coming together. And, you know, we had a set of hypotheses going into this. And I could tell you, having been now, you know, together for 7 months, I think every one of our hypotheses either met our expectations or has exceeded our expectations. And here are a few of them. Number one is the business capabilities and the markets that we serve are almost entirely complementary. So MagellanRx was very focused on middle market, employer, direct to employer, PBM services, expert and specialty drug management, both on the pharmacy benefit, but distinctively on the medical benefit, managing specialty spend on the medical benefit, and have a very large national footprint in state Medicaid business, and particularly the fee-for-service Medicaid business. And those are all lines of businesses where Prime really didn't play or really didn't operate. Conversely, you look at Prime, and Prime has world-class capabilities in managing health plan relationships, particularly those large regional Blue Cross Blue Shield players and many multi-state Blues plans as well are clients of Prime. And that brings an industrial strength chassis and capability that enables us to deploy MagellanRx products and services across into that chassis, our specialty capabilities, medical specialty management capabilities, and the complementary nature of government programs and government solutions come into play. So not a lot of overlap. And oftentimes, you know, if you look back at many deals done in PBM, they're typically done for synergies, where you bring two components together, you get supply chain synergies, you get operating leverage. This is much more about complementary capabilities that come together. And now, as we put these two companies together, we have a broad set of capabilities that enable us to play in any segment of the market with distinctive capabilities that enable us to differentiate ourselves in those markets. So it's really a transformational deal where 1+1 truly equals something vastly larger than 2. And we're really excited about, you know, the way that the integration's gone so far. We're 6 or 7 months in. We're still working through, you know, certain technical components of the integration, but so far it's gone really well. And, you know, with respect to the question around naming a successor as the CEO of MagellanRx, I don't see us doing that. Again, our goal is to continue to move more towards creating a new organization that brings those integrated set of capabilities. And so the distinction between legacy organizations should fade away over time as we emerge as one new organization with a new set of combined capabilities.
Peter Werwein here. So does that mean that Magellan Rx is going to be retired as a separate entity, a separate brand, and it's all going to be Prime Therapeutics? Or do you plan to sort of keep it, its identity and its strengths in managing pharmacy on the medical benefit side, sort of distinct from Prime?
Well, I'd say over time, we will phase out the Magellan Rx brand name. However, we're still evaluating our options in terms of what we should do with the broader branding strategy. We haven't concluded one way or the other there. We're looking at our options, but it will be imperative for us to continue to talk about our distinctive competencies and our unique capabilities, whether that's medical management, industrial strength, health plan, PBM capabilities, the government programs expertise that we bring to the table. So I think it'd be beneficial for us. And my view and vision is that over time, we emerge with a new identity that encompasses the distinctive capabilities of both organizations rather than kind of aligning to legacy company names and legacy company cultures. And the reason for that, Peter, candidly, is I think it's essential for us to emerge as one team, one culture, one organization that's focused on doing the right things for our customers and patients, and the ensuring that we're all marching to the same mission and theme and brand identity is a piece of getting the organization to a single culture. And so that's the motivating driver behind, the philosophy there.
Are you going to be, by virtue of this acquisition, are you going to be selling a different set of services to the Blues plans that you work with? I know you're owned by 19 Blues plans and their affiliates, but you work with a couple dozen, I believe, Blues plans. So are you in the near term, are you bringing a new, Magellan type services to the Blues plans that you work with?
Yes, absolutely. There are immediate opportunities for us to create value for our Blue clients by bringing those Magellan capabilities. In fact, you're right. We work with about a couple dozen Blues plans. But in fact, Magellan was working with a handful of those same Blues plans before this deal came together. So we have a handful of Blue clients that understand the Magellan capabilities. And we've got an even larger group of Prime Blue clients that we're now in the process of talking through implementation of the Magellan solution. So it's immediate value creation for our clients. And then as we think out on a broader horizon, there are additional capabilities that we're in process of thinking through to add even more value to our Blues clients, as well as all of our other clients. The Magellan Rx book of business brings a set of TPA clients, employer clients, as well as smaller regional health plans. And we're equally committed to continuing to deliver value to all of our clients.
It's been a long-term trend in the pharmacy benefit management industry, a consolidation. And some people have expressed concern about that, we now commonly talk about the big three. So what would you say to somebody who says this amount of consolidation in healthcare is bad, it reduces competition, it creates too much market power in too few hands?
Well, I'd start by saying that I think, it depends on the deal thesis. Why was the acquisition done? And so, as you think about the last, decade of deals, oftentimes the deals were done to create more negotiating leverage with the supply chain, namely pharma. And the truth of the matter is, if you look at the results that consolidation delivered, pharma responded to it. You know, as these organizations got larger and larger, the discounts that PBMs were able to extract off of the list price of pharma's products continued to expand. And, you know, I've had the distinct benefit of working for three different PBMs now over the course of my 17-year career in this industry. I worked for Medco Health Solutions, which was is now Express Scripts. At the time that I was there, it was the largest publicly traded PBM in the country. Then I worked at Magellan, which was, you know, really a disruptor and innovator that was looking to create a different kind of experience and model. And now, you know, with Magellan and Prime coming together, a PBM that is a large national scale PBM that's owned by not-for-profit Blue Cross Blue Shield plans with a focus on improving outcomes for patients, improving the affordability equation. And all three of those business models were very, very different. And so I think it really depends on why organizations are coming together, what they're leveraging consolidation to do. And I'd say, you know, in the early days with, you know, the bigger acquisitions that we've seen, it's been about scale. And the reality is that it worked. Pharma responded to it. And when I was, you know, when we were building Magellan Rx and we were looking to, we had our own contracts with manufacturers, and there was a real difference between what pharma, what discount pharma would be willing to give to a very large player versus a smaller player. And so, you know, that's just the reality of where we are. Now, as I think about Prime and Magellan Rx coming together, it's really not about extracting more value out of the supply chain. I think that's already been done by virtue of the GPOs and all the different ways that you can access size and scale. It's now more about capabilities and an acknowledgement that the business model is fundamentally shifting from, you know, what used to be a high volume, moderate cost business to now a very low volume, very high cost business with the proliferation of specialty drugs. Every plan's experiencing over 50% of their drug spend is now in specialty. 1 to 2% of patients driving half your spend. That just requires you to think about how you deliver value differently. And that's what this combination is about. It's not about extracting incremental unit cost discounts. I think that play has played out in our industry.
I wanted to ask a question kind of relating to the Prime and Magellan merger a bit. So with Prime having, I believe, about 3,800 employees, do you see that number growing or decreasing?
Well, you know, Prime had about 3,800 employees. Magellan Rx had roughly 3,000 employees. So, you know, we're now approaching 7,000 employees. And I don't expect us to grow by virtue of just the two organizations coming together. I don't expect us to have any material decrease in the number of employees that we have. However, I do believe that we have significant growth opportunities ahead of us for our business. And as we continue to grow our business, I do expect that we'll grow our employee base as well as that evolves.
Getting back to what you're talking about, that in some sense the industry you know, is focused on specialty drugs now. Over 50% of the spend. So, how do the tactics and the strategies that PBMs use need to change to reflect that, you know, the this is where the your contribution can be made now, not in the high volume drugs that it's, we're talking about extraordinarily expensive drugs for sometimes just a few thousand people. So what is it still the menu of prior auth and utilization review, or does a whole different set of tools need to be considered and used?
Yeah, I firmly believe that, you know, there's a foundation of basic capabilities and the high volume components of PBM. Not saying they aren't important, but there it's all about optimization there. You know, how do you ensure that the patient's getting the lowest cost on a generic, that you take into account cash card? So all of those, I would say, are incremental optimization tactics to ensure that you stay on top of it. The fundamental seismic shift is happening in specialty. And so when you think about just the fact that 1 to 2% of a given population are driving 50 plus percent of every dollar spent on pharmacy, it requires you to think, to reimagine pharmacy management and think differently about a few things. Number one, removing friction from the experience. And so prior auth is there for an important reason, and it serves an important, valuable check and balance for our plans. However, there are ways to make it more streamlined, more effective, share information more frequently, make it easier for physicians. All of those things are important when you're dealing with specialty drugs and specialist physicians. And so being able to create tools that give physicians the information to make real-time decisions in their office so they're not delaying care, so that they're not dealing with incremental administrative costs is critical in specialty. Again, number two is the patient experience. You know, oftentimes these patients are diagnosed with a serious condition, and in addition to dealing with the psychological burden of that, you don't want to add on top of that administrative burden, financial burden. And so we have the opportunity to go the extra mile and put a care model in place that helps those patients navigate through all of the complexity associated with beginning on a specialty drug and maintaining your therapy on a specialty drug. So there are administrative components to that. There are digital tools that can support. And then there's nursing care, whether it's telephonic or in-home, to help people manage through that condition. Those things become critically important, and they don't apply when you're filling your simvastatin, you know, at any pharmacy and you've been on it and stable for 10 years, right? So those are things that capabilities and muscle that PBMs need to build, in my opinion, and where I think we have a competitive advantage when you look at Prime and Magellan's combined capabilities. And we're excited about what we can do with that to help improve patient experience and client experience, as well as provider experience. And those now are our constituents. It's all three.
A subset of the, and you know, they grab a lot of headlines, a subset of these specialty drugs are the gene therapies, the one-time, some of them billed as one-time therapies that are curative, that cost $2 to $3 million. So what are your thoughts about how to pay for those drugs? Has Prime started to wrestle with that? Are we talking, you know, everybody's talking about, you know, value-based contracting and whatnot, but I'm not sure whether it's gained that much traction. Are you installment plans based on durability? How does a PBM manage the $1 million or the $2 million one-time gene therapy cost?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's a question that's on the mind of all of our constituents. And so, you know, there are a few things that I'll say about that. The first is, you know, everything I described about specialty being, you know, 1 to 2% of patients, this is an even smaller subset of that. So now we're talking about the next iteration of specialization and in high cost drugs. And so it requires us to further enhance our high touch capabilities across the providers, the patients, and the health plans and or the employer groups that are paying for this. And what I've learned over the past couple of years on this is everyone, you know, depending on the payer, everyone has a different set of concerns. Some employers, if you're a small employer and you're covering 100 employees, 50 employees, 200 employees, one of these can completely throw your budget off for the year. So that becomes reinsurance or a pay over time model becomes important. However, if you're a large, well-capitalized health plan, you can self-insure. So that component doesn't become as important. So as we've looked at this, and we are very focused on this area, as we know it's the next frontier, and we want to be ahead of the curve on this, there are a couple of components that you need to have a comprehensive solution here. First is that reinsurance product, a competitively priced reinsurance product to help in those scenarios where it makes sense. Two is most of these products need to be administered. The administration is complex and they need to be administered in hospitals. So setting up the right centers of excellence nationally for patients to get these therapies administered in the best possible places so we can ensure that we get the predictable outcomes that we're looking for. So managing the provider network and ensuring that we have high quality providers administering these drugs at agreed upon rates. And so there's a volume commitment to these centers of excellence, and then there's a rate commitment to these centers of excellence. The third piece is the patient navigation component. You know, if you're a hemophilia patient and you've been stable on factor for 10 years, you know, what are the set of decisions that lead you to want to alter your genes to cure? Who are the right candidates? And how do you help a patient navigate through that kind of decision is another important component of this. So the patient care and navigation. And then lastly is this value-based contracting component. So, most of these products will have to wait and see what the durability of these curative therapies look like. And so ensuring that we've got the right value-based contract structure, but also very closely attached and related to that is the ability to track these patients longitudinally as they move from plan to plan or as they evolve from different government programs, and to have the right construct with pharma to ensure that, you know, we're paying for value. And that the concept is everyone agrees on the concept. If the drug doesn't work, you should get some form of a refund. The magic is in how do you track the patient? How do you do the analytics? And how do you make sure you have the right data in a way that enables you to do that effectively? That requires some infrastructure build that we're currently working on. But my view is if you string all of those components together, you've got a comprehensive way of dealing with cell and gene that I think will be industry leading. As we sit here today, my view is that there are a couple of point solutions that are in the market, but we're missing that comprehensive end-to-end view. And my hope is that Prime and Magellan will be leaders in this space.
Are you planning to sort of maybe put out on the market a separate cell and gene therapy management product or unit that would, you know, where you would fly the flag of that we can handle this for you, be it reinsurance, patient navigation? You know, I think some PBMs are headed in that direction where it's, you know, it's going to be a distinct entity that you'll put out there. So is that something you're talking about at Prime? And
yes, it is. Short answer is yes. I don't think of it as a completely separate unit or division. I think it needs to be a set of capabilities that are embedded in what we do, particularly in managing specialty. But there is a unique set of expertise that's required in order for us to do this effectively. So we do intend to position it that way. And, you know, I think that making sure that the model is durable is really critical. And so leveraging our relationships with the national Blues plans, the Blues plans across the country nationally, I think is an advantage for us and something that we should, that we will be looking at leveraging.
Let's change the subject a little bit. I'm interested in your GPO arrangement with Express Scripts, which was a 3-year deal that I believe was fairly recently renewed. Can you tell us how long the renewal is and exactly what is accomplished by this GPO arrangement? And I'd also like, maybe as part of your answer, I'd also like interested in your thoughts. Some people see these GPOs as further obscuring the PBM business. They call them rebate aggregators rather than GPOs, and that that the big three have set them up to escape regulation and transparency. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, you know, I've heard some of that that criticism over the years, and I think, you know, while I understand that, you know, there's an affordability issue that people are facing every day, and you always have to blame someone, it's astonishing to me, and I often find it surprising, particularly as I spend time speaking with regulators and lawmakers in DC and in the various states, how much misunderstanding there is about how these things work and why they're set up. So the GPO arrangement that we have is with Ascent. We are a part owner of Ascent alongside Express Scripts, and they are the majority owner in the entity. We're a minority owner. But it goes back to the comment I was making earlier about how do you most efficiently drive discounts and unit cost savings from pharma? And the reality is, as I mentioned, pharma has responded to size and scale. So you initially had the consolidation that we talked about, but these GPOs enable us to participate and benefit from size and scale. That's the only reason we're in a GPO, is to benefit from the collective size and scale of our volume and Express Scripts volume to garner the best possible unit cost economics for the customers we serve and our patients. And what's great about the relationship is that as an equity owner in Ascent, we have access and complete transparency to the contracts, the pharma contracts, how they work. And we know exactly what's coming through to us, what's being passed through to us, and we pass through that value to our clients. So I think the GPOs in and of themselves have been successful in leveraging scale to drive down unit cost. How each PBM uses that value is based on that PBM's business model, their decision-making, and not all. The other common misunderstanding is this belief that all PBMs are built the same way. And that's not at all true. Every PBM, there are 73 PBMs in the country. We often talk about the big three, but they all have different models. And I could speak for us in saying that our view of this business and our business model is to pass through value to our clients so they can create affordable benefits for their employers that they serve and the patients that they serve. And this relationship through Ascent has significantly enhanced our ability to meet that objective. So it's been successful. It's been positive. We've extended that relationship. Our initial term was 3 years. We've extended it, and we'll continue to evaluate that. And so long as it meets our needs in accomplishing those affordability goals, I don't see any reason to change the structure of that relationship.
Can you tell us how long you've extended it for?
I'm not sure that just given that Express Scripts is a public company, I'm not sure we've been public with that. So I'm not sure that I can share that, but it's a long-term contract.
Can you focus again? I know you're on the PCMA board, I believe, and that you are therefore no doubt aware of of all the action in Washington. The focus the attention that's been paid to PBMs the last few months. We don't have time to go through all the bills that have been proposed, but a common theme among them is a push for more transparency. I believe several of the bills, or a couple of the bills, would ban spread pricing. Some would also make rebates, require rebates be passed through. Are there some parts of these of these pieces of legislation that you agree with that might help rehabilitate the industry's reputation, which has been taking a hit?
Yes, yes. So I think that's a fantastic question. I am on the board of PCMA. I've been on the board for since 2015, I believe. So I've been a longtime board member and have seen how the narrative has evolved over time in Washington and state capitals across the country. I actually appreciate and understand why it's why the drumbeat keeps getting louder and louder. And ultimately, it's because Americans across the country are showing up at the pharmacy counter and are faced with prices that force them to make difficult decisions between taking their medication or paying their rent or putting groceries on the table. It's a real issue. It's an affordability issue. So it's because of that, I understand that elected officials are very interested in finding solutions. What I get very concerned about are the unintended consequences of policies that are built on a lack of understanding of how our industry works. And so I'll tell you that I am a huge proponent and fan of transparency. I think transparency is critical, but there's good transparency and there's bad transparency. What I view as good transparency is transparency to our clients and transparency to patients. They should know, our clients know exactly what deals they have with us. They know exactly what rebates are, the arrangements and terms of the contract, and patients should have clarity as to what they're going to pay at the pharmacy counter, how it's impacting their premiums, et cetera, et cetera. An example of bad transparency would be requiring PBMs to publish their negotiated discounts with every pharma manufacturer so that because that would create a sense of that would create the risk or the real outcome of tacit collusion. You know, oftentimes there are two, three, or four pharma companies that dominate a therapeutic category. So the way that PBMs are able to extract discounts is they negotiate with these manufacturers for preferred positioning. Now, if every manufacturer knows what offer, what discount their competitor has offered to PBMs, it'll be a regression to the mean. You know, they'll easily all, you know, get to the same discount. And now we've lost an important tool in our ability to drive pricing discounts. So that's a very nuanced component. So when we say transparency, it's great. We all love transparency, but transparency to whom and for what purpose becomes the nuanced argument. So I'm in full support of transparency to our clients. When it comes to the question of spread pricing and rebates at point of sale, again, I personally believe that there are different business models out there and certain business models work for certain clients. What I don't like about that legislation is it takes away client choice. So if you have transparency with your clients and they know exactly what a spread deal entails, what a pass-through deal entails, and they can choose, I think that creates a robust commercial arrangement between PBMs and clients. And when you start taking away choice, you again create unintended consequences. I'll give you an example about spread pricing. We don't do much spread pricing at all, but if a client wants it, we'll do it. And the reason why some clients like spread pricing is we take the risk and we offer a flat discount for the full year. And we say, we're just going to guarantee you this. If we're able to do better, we make money, the spread. If we do worse, we take the loss. And so for smaller clients, they want that predictability. So they'll say, give me a spread arrangement, guarantee me a rate. And oftentimes we don't charge an admin fee when we do that because we'll make our fee through the spread. Other clients say, I just want to pay whatever you're paying the pharmacy and I'll pay you an admin fee. Great. So we'll do that. So I think client choice is really essential and maintaining client choice is important. So for that reason, I don't think that some of these solutions, they're intending to solve a problem, but I think what they actually will create is fewer choices for employers, which means that it puts employers in a more difficult position in their ability to provide affordable benefits, which means you start eroding at employer-based benefits.
Thanks for tuning into this month's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts, and follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit us at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.